Welcome to another exciting David Greenwalt and the Lemus Lifestyle Presents audio program. Member Tom Anthony Whale has been with the Lemus Lifestyle Coaching Program since 1999. As you'll hear in just a moment, Tom has made a major transition not only in body but in mind and spirit. Known among the club members as the Why Guy because of his strong belief in all people knowing their why to create an amazing transformation, Tom will tell all about how he changed from living a life of Doritos and ding-dongs after work to one of leanness and even a bodybuilding competition. You can find Tom's pictures in the Success Gallery on the Leanness Lifestyle website. For now, sit back, put your thinking cap on, and get ready for David and Tom as they discuss how Tom finally achieved the body of his dreams 27 years after he first envisioned it. As David would say, failure just cannot handle persistence. And now, here's Dave and Tom.
I'd like to welcome everyone to the interview. Today I have on the phone with me Tom Whale from Wisconsin. Tom, can you hear me okay?
Yep, Dave. Doing good.
Great. Well, let's start right off here, and let's get to know you a little bit better since you've agreed to open up your life a little bit with us today. And let's find out some things that our members are going to be very interested in knowing about where you've been and where you've gone over the last several years. So tell me about the time you first realized your body was something other than what you wanted it to be. When was that?
You know, I'm thinking about this and looking back on it, I think I've been struggling with my body image since I was a teenager. When I was 13, I was too small and skinny. I was always kind of inferior to the other guys in school, you know, the old Charles Atlas and people kicking sand in your face. I was a kid who had to eat to make weight for wrestling. But I've also had the other side of the coin where when I turned probably about 35 or 40, right around that area, I'd realized I'd gotten really fat and out of shape. And at that time, I ballooned up to about 248 pounds.
So did this just happen overnight, or how long did it take for you to realize for the person that was skinny in high school and had the sand kicked in his face to become fat or obese?
It was a slow process. It didn't happen overnight. Matter of fact, I think I used the skinny thing as a excuse to overeat and always thinking, well, you know, I'm gaining muscle. I was always worried about being too small. And in Wisconsin and Midwest, I think we have pride in being bigger men, so to speak, especially in clothes because we wear clothes most of the time.
Yeah, with having our falls and our winters and definitely the seasons, we can stay covered up for a good 6 months out of the year, no question.
Yeah, and so I think being bigger in a shirt made me feel more quote-unquote manly.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think I use that kind of as an excuse to let the overeating go and not really say, well, you're getting heavy. And nobody really ever commented that, saying, hey, Tom, you're looking heavy. Or, you know, I think even in Wisconsin, at 248 pounds, at probably, you know, 40% body fat, you're still leaner than a lot of the people that live here.
Absolutely. Well, I've come to know you pretty well, Tom, and I know you've been a bodybuilding buff for quite some time. What age were you when you first thought that perhaps having a bodybuilder's body was pretty cool or maybe something that you might someday want to have?
It's funny that you asked me that because it brought back a memory here that I can remember exactly where I was when I first wanted to be a bodybuilder. I was actually working as a busboy in a Chinese restaurant, believe it or not.
Mm-hmm.
And things were a little slow that afternoon, and they had the Wide World of Sports on. And I saw Sergio Oliva compete with Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Wow.
And when I saw that, I just looked at that and I thought, you know, I just couldn't believe my eyes that anybody could be that big and that awesome. And I said to myself, you know, if I had a physique like that, nobody'd mess with me. Mm-hmm. This is what I want to do.
How old were you then?
I was probably about 13 years old.
Oh, probably about 13. You were busting tables at 13?
Yeah.
Yeah, you and me both.
Yeah.
That's interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
It's so true, though, and I was the same way when I was that age. And people that aren't that way, you look at that bodybuilding physique, and you're just in awe of what it takes or what you know it took or the power that it exudes, you know?
Well, there was just this overriding confidence, both men. You know, Sergio had this, I'll never forget his V taper. I mean, the little tiny waist and this gigantic gigantic lat spread. I'd never seen anything like that on anybody before, and it was just like, oh my God. Mm-hmm. And the arms, you know, when Arl did his arm shot, it was just like, oh my God.
Right.
I gotta be like this. This is what I want to look like.
Exactly. So you were skinny in high school, and you got married pretty young, right?
Yep, got married at, actually, Terry was 19 and I was 20.
Okay. So, and you've already said that it took a long time for the weight to creep on, but, you know, it was when you were 35 or 40 that you really started to realize, my gosh, I've gotten pretty heavy. Tell us a little bit about when you were, say, at your heaviest. What was the daily regimen like for Tom?
Oh, let's see. Well, pretty much, we'd get up in the morning. I would have, my breakfast would be 3 to 4, maybe 5 chocolate chip cookies, large ones.
You actually ate breakfast?
Well, yeah, but it was chocolate chip cookies and a big gulp Mountain Dew.
Okay.
That was the extent of my breakfast. Snack was probably, I actually did eat more than one meal a day.
Okay.
My snack was usually like a bag of Doritos and another Mountain Dew. Lunch was usually like a large ham and cheese sandwich with double cheese and a lot of mayo on a bun, and probably a large bag of chips or Doritos or something like that, another big gulp Mountain Dew. Then I'd have some type of snack, candy bar, some type of thing for my afternoon snack, and supper was usually a McDonald's, Arby's, Pizza Hut, you name it. We pretty much just did the rotation of eating out at fast food restaurants for our dinner.
Okay.
And I forgot to say our stress time. When we got home from work, usually Terry and I would go in the corner. We had like a kitchen cupboard area in our old house, and in the corner was kind of our stress corner. We didn't know it at the time, but that was what it was. And we would come home and we would share a bag of Doritos and how our day went or whatever. And it was always in that same corner. So we always kind of went there for the Cheetos or the Doritos or whatever happened to be there.
Okay, so you had your corner of the house that had all your snacks in it, and you'd that's where you would congregate to discuss your day.
Yeah, that was kind of a fairly regular ritual, too, that we had, Terry and I. It was our together time.
What was your heaviest adult weight, Tom? Tell the listeners how tall you are and how old were you?
Okay, I'm about 5'10 and a half, 5'11, and at my heaviest, I weighed in at about 248 pounds, if I remember correctly. And that was a size 38 tight pants, because I remember that in particular because one of the keys that made me change the way I was thinking about myself was they supply pants at work. And ever since I started work at the transit company, I kept going up in sizes and finally got to size 38, and it was tight, and I had to make a choice. Either I was going to go to size 40 or do something about it. So that actually was like a trigger for me to say, hey, I gotta make a change.
How old were you then?
At that time, I was 40 years old.
Now, what prompted you then to say enough is enough this first time?
Well, actually, Terry was the one who inspired me to make a change.
Okay.
We had gone to State Fair contests, State Fair as we went every year.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, our first date was a bodybuilding contest at the Mr. Wisconsin State Fair in 1975. I better get that date right, I think.
I'll tell you what, if that wasn't an omen, there's nothing is.
She knew what she was getting into, right?
Absolutely.
Unbelievable. But I'm one of the few people I'm very fortunate to find a soulmate in life, I'll tell you. Anyway, when we got married, I was like skinny as a rail, and literally. And tried various different training programs, tried weight gain powders. Those were mostly sugar in a can, I think, in those days.
Sugar and chalkboard dust.
Yeah, oh, they were terrible tasting. I remember drinking some of those things, just wondering why I was even doing it.
Absolutely nasty.
And it would have been better for me to just drink a regular malt, you know.
Oh, sure.
Oh, God, that stuff was bad. And so I think over time, you know, with the marital weight gain and everything and the sedentary job, it all kind of added up. And
so Terry packed on the weight right along with you, right?
Yeah, and you know, neither one of us really noticed it with each other. She came to me that day and she was crying and she said, you know, honey, as we were walking out of the fair, she says, I want to do something about my weight. And I said, why? What's the matter? You know,
you're just oblivious.
To me.
You were oblivious, right?
Right, totally.
Yeah.
Totally oblivious.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't bother me at all. But she was really, really hurting and really committed to it. And I said, well, I says, she knew I had trained before and asked me to set up a program for her. I said I would do it. And she started off with, she said, well, do you mind if I try Jenny Craig? I says, I don't care. You know, it's
right.
I figure this is going to last, 3-4 weeks, and then it'll be over with.
Right.
I help by eating all the foods in the house. She stayed to her program, mm-hmm. so believe it. And within about 6 weeks, 6 to 8 weeks, because it was about Thanksgiving time when we all noticed that, you know, she had really dropped some weight, and she had gone from a size 14 to about a size 8 at that time, about Thanksgiving time.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Really made a change, really made a difference, and was looking good. And by Christmas of that year, she had gone down to a size 6. And after Christmas, that was when I got the pants thing at work, because they do that on an annual basis. And at that point in time, I said, my God, you know, I looked at myself in the mirror, and I said, you know, I really got to stop doing this, because I was still going to McDonald's. She wouldn't go along. I'd bring her home a coffee or something like that, so we'd do something together.
Right.
But I understood how important this was to her, and I was going to support her 110%. And she didn't push me. She didn't edge me, although she was hoping I would do something. And she just kind of led by quiet example, you know. And I just decided at that point in time, I got to make a change. And I looked at myself in the mirror and said, that's it. And I saw, at that time, I saw a new bodybuilding magazine. To me, it was new. It was Muscle Media, and they were running Body for Life. At that time, I think it was Body Work Challenges.
Right.
But these were real people. Mm-hmm. What had discouraged me about bodybuilding before was that the guys were getting way too big. A lot of them were just out of proportion. It didn't seem real to me anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And seeing these people were like real people, you know, and they were making real changes. And I thought, geez, I could do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think I could do that. I've got enough knowledge. I studied bodybuilding for many years. I'd been putzing around a little bit, but never put the nutrition and the everything together. And so I embarked on a body of work challenge.
So your first challenge, your first kind of out of the gate, was a body of work challenge.
Right.
Okay. And you went from probably 240-ish down to what?
I went down to about 220 at the time.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. You got an honorable mention.
Absolutely. And so you graduated from that, and how much time transpired between the end of that and your next venture?
It wasn't too long, because I remember at that time I was looking for supplements,
mm-hmm.
and I think I called a friend of mine, actually, not really a friend, but an acquaintance,
mm-hmm.
had been doing some painting at work by us, and I had just been talking about things. He had big arms, and so somehow we got onto the subject or topic or whatever of training and stuff like that, and he had told me about that he had gotten his EAS supplements at this place called the Power Store.
Mm-hmm.
So at that point in time, I thought, well, I'll go online, check this place out. Well, I bought a few supplements from the Power Store, and at that time, emailed you a couple questions about supplements and training, things like that, and you were kind enough to respond, and always your responses were always very straightforward and everything, and I thought this was pretty cool. So I think after the Body of Work Challenge, I kind of saw that now they were starting to run the Body for Life Challenge, and I did some success coaching after the Body of Work Challenge and decided to do a Body for Life Challenge.
Okay. So you did a Body for Life Challenge. Did you start that challenge at around 225 then?
Yeah, about 225, because I gained a few pounds back.
Right. And so you started at 225, and you finished that challenge about where?
Right around 200.
Okay, so you lost about 25 there.
Mm-hmm.
And so then, that's round two, we would say.
Right.
So now, where's round three start?
Well, round three actually was kind of a short burst. You had been coaching me a little bit online, and we had gotten... we were participating a lot in an online group on a BFL group, and they were going to do a trip to Vegas, and this was the first BFL get-together. So I trained real hard for that one, and I went up, I had gone back up to about 205, and got down to about 190 for the Vegas trip. Looking pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Matter of fact, even had a good enough picture that we got it in the Power Store News. That's a picture of Terry and I in the Vegas.
Right.
At Vegas, if you remember.
That's
right.
That's right, yes.
That's how far back that goes. That's amazing. That's like 2.5 years ago.
Right.
Yeah. And so we did that. And at that time, I met Hank Johnson and Scott Nelson. And they were starting to get involved in a company called Body Logix. So they had a challenge. And Hank and Scott both convinced me to try this Body Logix challenge.
Okay. And
all right.
So that's now we're going to do round three here.
Yeah. Well, actually, round four.
Round four. Yes, round four. We're going round four, and now we're going to do the Body Logix Challenge.
Right.
Okay, so how'd you do? Where'd you start? Where'd you end?
Well, we started at about 195 pounds, because I gained a little bit from Vegas again. I always seem to kind of go back up a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And we did an eight-week challenge. It was only an eight-week challenge now because there wasn't a lot of time. They were kind of pressing to get this company going and everything, and I kind of entered it a couple weeks late. And you had coached me really good through this one. We worked hard on this one. Scott gave me some ab routine stuff, and Hank helped me with my essays and helped me with a few things, and you coached me along. And at this time, you had actually come out with your first version of The Leanness Lifestyle.
1999.
Yep. So
okay.
The book was out. And I was reading the book and doing a lot of the things that were prescribed in there to get ready for this challenge. Well, we got down to 174 pounds at 9% body fat, which was good enough to actually win my class second place in the Body Logics Challenge.
Awesome. And then, and those are a lot of the pictures that we still see, you know, on our website and whatnot. And we, as we speak, we haven't quite updated. But you were really lean for that, and you looked really, really good.
Yeah, a lot of folks said that, you know, I mean, even you said that I looked less than probably 9%, but really when I look back at it now and from where I stand now at this time, I probably was about 9% body fat.
Mm-hmm.
And that's actually the one of the pictures that are actually one of the ones that is on the calendar this month.
So you got down to 9% at the end of Body Logics. You placed second in their national competition and had some fun with that. And at that time, though, did you believe when you were there at 175-ish and 9%, that you could live there?
No. I was pretty much from the perception of the old school where you bulk up and train down. In other words, in order to gain muscle, you have to gain fat along with it, and then you train down.
Right. Was kind of describe, if you would, Tom, the difference, though, between the old school, which isn't necessarily wrong in that you may not you may have to overcome some fears of adding a little bit of fat if you really want to add appreciable muscle mass. I don't think either of us would really disagree with that. But what's the difference between bulking up and stripping down and having a belief that you can live lean? Did you believe you could live lean? Did you believe you could live at the 174, 175 when you finished Body Logics?
No, because at that time I think my mindset was more about getting there than to being about living there.
Right.
So in other words, I was thinking about, okay, once I get there, that's great. Okay, now I can go back up to, say, maybe 190 pounds again, which was a very livable, it seemed like my set point at that point in time was about 190 pounds, and I could live there very comfortably without making too many adjustments. I would fit in a size 34 pants very reasonably.
Mm-hmm.
And quite honestly, from where I was at, from 250 pounds just about, you know, I have size 38 tights, size 34 loose, there's a big difference there. Plus the fact, again, I still have this mental perception of myself being too small in clothes.
Right.
So that kind of played a little bit of into the thought of not being able to live or be big enough at 174 pounds.
I had written early on in either version one or one of the early versions of the Leanness Lifestyle about the feelings of the big man getting small and feeling overwhelmed by how small he feels. And plus he gets all the comments from relatives and grandmothers and whatnot telling him that he needs to eat a sandwich. And then you ended up coining the phrase smallies.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we use now when we say big man gets the smallies. And the idea has been around a long time because you and I both know that a lot of guys that were once big have a huge problem with this, even if they were fat.
Right.
They have a huge problem with getting smaller even though they're getting leaner. You get people making comments like, geez, your shoulders aren't near as wide as they used to be.
You know?
Did you get in a car wreck? Do you have cancer? Are you feeling okay?
Well, it was terrible for me because, you know, I mean, I'm an entertainer, so I'd be out on the gig, and people literally would come up to me with plates of cookies and cake and stuff and offer it to me because they thought I was getting just too thin.
Mm-hmm.
So that was...
You ever notice, though, and we've talked about this, but you ever notice how no one thinks you're getting too fat?
Yeah.
Or they never say anything?
Yeah, I don't know why that is either. But,
boy, you know, you're really packing it on. You might want to watch it.
Right.
No one ever says that.
No, they don't.
But they don't hesitate at all to say, boy, you're getting kind of thin. Are you sure you want to lose anymore?
Right.
They don't hesitate.
No,
such a double edge.
It is.
But let's talk for a bit then before we continue on about how the perception changed and kind of what happened. When did your perception of whether you could live lean, not just get there, when did your perception change of whether you could live there? When did that really change and why?
Well, I think basically it changed when you decided to do your contest. And
2001.
Yeah.
Yep.
And you decided to do a contest in May, And after that contest, which you looked totally awesome and totally ripped, and you said, you had told me, Tom, I really think I can live here. And you had said in the past that, well, you can touch this, but you really can't live there.
Yeah, we mortals get to visit the land of 5 or 6%, but we don't get to live there.
Right, exactly. And so I thought, well, we'll see how this goes. Call me the doubting Thomas.
Right.
And you know that, because I kind of teased you about it a little bit and said, well, let's see how this goes, Dave.
Mm-hmm.
And even, I think at that time, you weren't necessarily 100% sure that you could live there, but you definitely were going to give it a shot.
Well, you know, it's one of those things where scientifically and practically and logically, there was no reason why you shouldn't.
Right.
If the small seeds of doubt that never got watered and that I ended up crushing were because I hadn't done it.
Right.
It's like so many other people that have never been lean. Logically, scientifically, and practically, you can look at it and say, there's no reason for me to be as heavy or obese as I am. But I've never been lean. So the doubt is there. And even though I was maintaining excellent physical condition, and by all rights, you know, doctors were applauding me and standing and cheering and everything with regard to cholesterol, with regard to living super lean, I hadn't done it. So you're right. There was still some doubt. So you saw me say it, you saw me compete, and when did things start to kind of click for you?
Well, you kept living there. You know, I had seen you pass that time, and a couple months passed, and you were still there. And the other example I had was Terry. Terry had gone down to a size 2 petite, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And she had lived there. I mean, just literally lived there, comfortably lived there. She hadn't wrestled with this at all. I mean, it's not like, you know, she made these big efforts to stay at size 2 petite.
Right.
It just was. And you were starting to have it become, it just is. I'm just, this is where I live. This
mm-hmm.
is where, you know, when we got together and I saw you again, it's like, well, yeah, he's still there. You know, he still got his abs. And I'm thinking to myself, well, you know, if you can do it, I wanted to kind of follow my mentor and coach
mm-hmm.
and see if I could get down there and change my mindset. And at that point in time, I decided, let's try and do a contest in May. And instead of the focus being to get there this time, let's see if the focus, I could change my mindset and have the focus be more about making changes maybe a little less drastic, getting there a little slower, and then deciding that this is where I want to live, rather than the journey this time wasn't necessarily about being at the destination, but living at the destination.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about this year then, 2002 that is, and tell us about where your weight has been, say, from you know, the first part of the year or wherever you want to kind of start.
Well, I started about, at the beginning of the year, I started about in 190 pounds again.
Okay.
Started training down for the contest in May, ended up with a back injury.
Mm-hmm.
We both decided that I should back off of the contest, and I trained pretty hard, so I was pretty discouraged, and I was kind of depressed, I'll be honest with you. My weight kind of ballooned back up a little bit to, I had gotten down to probably about 175 pounds and it ballooned back up to about 185
mm-hmm.
during that recovery time. And at that point in time, I think you noticed that I really needed a new focus. I couldn't just decide to do another contest next May because it would be too long and I would lose my focus.
Mm-hmm.
So you kind of pushed the ante up a little bit and kind of challenged me to do a reverse risk leverage. So that's...
Tell us about that.
Well, I had a hard time with that because we bantered that around a lot.
Right.
I was having a hard time finding something that would not be a negative consequence because my experience with Body Logics and everything, I didn't need to be penalized for not
mm-hmm.
making my goal. It just didn't feel right. So I wanted to set up a reward for making my goal rather than being penalized for not making my goal. And after a lot of thought, I came up with the bedroom challenge. And the bedroom challenge was we had just moved into a new house, and Terry wanted a brand new bedroom set. And so I convinced her that I would send the money to you and order the bedroom set, which we did, and I had to make my goal in order to get the bedroom set.
Which, at the time, I thought was, and still do, it's an awesome leverage because so many times it's all about moving away from pain. But in your particular case, it was actually double, I'm going to say it's double-edged, and I believe that it was moving away from pain, but the cool thing about your leverage, Tom, that I've always liked, is the pain you would have felt isn't so much that you lost the money. You and I have talked about this, and it's not that anyone sitting on a mound of cash or stuffing their pillows with $100 bills here, but money isn't just a big motivator for you.
Right.
But it was, tell us, why? Where would the pain be if you didn't make it?
The pain would be not, you know, would be disappointing Terry, and you know, I would move mountains for her anytime, any place, and you know, to see the fact that if I did this, not only would I have a better looking body, but we would have this brand new bedroom set in our house, and every time I saw it, it would be a reward to myself of knowing that I accomplished the goal. Plus the fact that every morning when I got up and I saw our old bedroom set, it reminded me of the fact that, hey, you know, if I just keep my nose to the fire here, we're going to have a brand new bedroom set. So, you know, every morning it was a constant reminder. And as far as the pleasure of being able to give Terry something, I think that really motivated me.
You know, a lot of people, when they're thinking of something like this, they think to themselves, well, I want to get in shape, but I mean, come on, I'm not going to go overboard for it. And as I've told many, and I'll continue to say, and I'll say it on this interview, you know, you really have to decide how important it is for you. But what steps did you take to get the money to send to me to make all this happen?
We had actually just finished mortgaging out our house and everything, so We didn't have a lot of disposable cash.
Right.
So we borrowed the money and put the money actually up on a payment plan schedule, and then sent the money to you.
How much money are we talking here?
We're talking $2,000.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's important that people know, you know, that in this regard and other leverages that, you know, we're talking about $2,000 here. You know, that's not a measly sum. And you had to take a loan out to get it.
Right.
But you were willing to do that. You did do that. And what that shows so blatantly and clearly is your commitment to your goal. And that is, in a nutshell, what leveraging is all about.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was exactly what I needed at the time, too, because I think without that, I could have easily gone up to probably 220 pounds or more waiting for the perfect time to do the contest if I would have ever done it. And so I think, you know, you're pushing me as a good coach and knowing where you could push me and how far you could push me, and knowing what my real desire and my real heart was talking, I think, and you were very patient with me, we wrestled through this thing together as a coach and as a team member, so to speak, and we came to this conclusion together, and it definitely paid off, no question about it.
So we decided against the May show due to the back injury, but I urged you to come up with a leverage to keep your focus so that you didn't have an unnecessary rebound, and then it would buy us some time to think about what we would do, and just to see how your back would heal up.
Right.
And so the weeks and a couple of months went on, and the leverage was in place, and that kind of held your feet to the fire and kept you committed when you might not have otherwise been committed. And eventually you decided to do another show.
Yep.
We set it up. So how'd that come about? And let's talk about it, because I think we're really only looking at 5 or 6 months.
Right. Well, June 28th, actually, I remember the date well.
Okay.
I touched 168. Touched it.
Okay.
We needed to do that to make the goal for the bedroom set.
Okay.
So we touched that. And at that point in time, I knew the next step was I had to do a show. I had seen Jason compete. We had gotten together for that. It was really exciting for him. And seeing him come in shredded and ripped, and he really looked good.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, again, I think he helped me dispel the smallies a little bit, too, because he's not a real big guy as far as height.
Right.
But on stage, ripped, he looked big.
And
he looked good.
And we both saw Jason come in, and I've seen, of course, dozens, but like you said, for you, it was a real eye-opener that Jason weighed around 140-some pounds, but on stage, he was larger than life.
Yes, he was.
And I think that was, like you said, very, very good to see. So you did prepare for this competition. You were already kind of had your feet held to the fire. And you started, after you touched 168, you came back up probably to the, what, mid to upper 170s?
Yeah, actually, I only went up, the highest I think I went up to was about 175. And that actually came about 6 weeks out from the show. And that was due mostly to the death of my father-in-law. I had had a real bad week of basically eating a lot of bad food, kind of comfort food, went for everything and anything. But up to that point and past that point, the highest I ever went to was 173. So I basically lived down there and just kind of increased exercise minutes rather than decreasing calories. I did decrease calories too. I started out around 1750, and towards the end, the last couple of weeks, I was down to about 1350 for just a couple of weeks, though.
Right. Well, I know we've talked about this before, and I know it's hard, but with the death of your father-in-law along the way, it's just another example of how life just keeps throwing us zingers and tests and things that we just have to deal with. And I know that in our talks about this in private, we've said that although the show was the last thing you really wanted at that time, it was without a doubt what you absolutely needed. Can you talk about that for just a second?
Yeah, I really think so. I mean, it could have been easily for both Terry and I. Terry struggled with this too, and this is the first time actually in 4 years that she stayed at size 2 petite that I saw her actually struggle with food issues.
Mm-hmm.
We both did. I mean, we both hit that corner again.
Right.
It's funny how old habits can come back even if after you haven't done them for 4 years.
Right.
We ate in places that we hadn't frequented in 2 to 3 years,
mm-hmm.
you know, McDonald's and other places, and the food didn't even taste that good, but for some reason we were drawn to it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we just didn't care.
Right.
And in the back of my mind, I kept going, you know, does this show really mean anything? Does, you know, is there any sense to it? The funny thing is, though, instinctively, I increased my cardio at that time, and I actually increased my exercise minutes. Part of it, I think, was the fact that exercising made me feel better emotionally. I went out for long runs. I increased the number of sets I did. My strength was up because I was eating more calories. And so I think I kind of exercised my way through that tough time. And it took about 2 weeks for Terry and I to really, with each other's help, kind of get through that early grieving period.
Mm-hmm.
And without the contest, I don't know that, I think we would have pulled it together in time.
Yes.
But I don't think we would have been able to pull it together as quickly as we did.
I absolutely agree. So let's talk about the preparation for the show then, okay?
Okay.
So here you are, life keeps dealing you what it deals us all, and you know, one of the things that dealt you during this was one of the hardest things that any of us ever has to deal with, and that's the death of a loved one. But you're preparing for the show, and you've already told people you went from 1750 in your last couple of weeks, you were down to 1300, so some people right now are gasping and cringing and freaking out, trying to think, you know, that's starvation, you know, all this kind of stuff. But typically speaking, not a best day, not a worst day. You talked about what it took to get you 250 pounds. You talked about your 5 cookies for breakfast and your big gulp Mountain
right.
Dew and all that. What was a typical day, not a high, not a low,
okay.
for you as you were preparing for the show, say maybe 5, 6, you know, 7, 8 weeks out, something like that?
Let's see. Typically in the morning, I would get up early in the morning. For me and Terry, it seems like morning workouts work out best for us. I just find that if I do it in the morning, it's just a great start to the day. And nothing interrupts my workouts. Now, during contest training, a little different mindset. I would sometimes train twice a day. And towards the end, towards the last couple weeks, I'd train at least twice a day. But on a regular day, on a typical day, getting close, about 6 weeks, 6, 8 weeks out, I'll get up in the morning about 3 o'clock, drink a glass of water. That's my key to getting up early in the morning. Because by 20 minutes, I'd hit the snooze alarm. And by about 20 minutes, I'm getting up before the snooze alarm gets off because I've got a go to the bathroom, quite frankly.
Right, sure.
So it's a great little tip if you're struggling with trying to get up in the morning to work out. That's kind of the way I've done it for many years, and it really works out well. I would take 3 NO2s and 4 NeuroCharge at that time.
Okay.
Then I would go downstairs and do 20 minutes or so on the cross trainer, interval training. Come up, have some breakfast. And my breakfast would be like 5 to 6 egg whites and 1 yolk made in my egg maker. I'm a gadget guy, remember?
That's right. Tom is a gadget guy, if you don't know. He's got lots of household appliance, gadgety type things in his
kitchen
home.
Challenge, so without the gadgets, I'm no good, you know? I'd have a half a cup of oatmeal or about a half a grapefruit, or I would have 2 scoops of the ISP Premium as a shake,
mm-hmm.
or a Metrics,
mm-hmm.
and 1 tablespoon of Udos. I would take creatine and glutamine and the Bridge, 3 liver tablets, and 3 CLA tablets at
okay.
that time.
So there's breakfast.
That's breakfast. Midday, I would have either a low-fat yogurt or low-fat cottage cheese, a scoop of Honest Whey or Muscle Provider, and a peach a plum or an apple. But sometimes I would have a half, but, you know, or three quarters, just depending on what the calorie was at that time. Again, three liver tablets, creatine, glutamine, four NeuroCharge. Sometimes I would have a little Fiber One to keep things going.
Yep.
And a little low-fat granola at that time, maybe about, you know, like a quarter cup of each or something like that.
Okay.
Lunch, I would have chicken breast or turkey breast or tuna or even lean beef, about 3 to 4 ounces, sometimes five. And I would have a cup to a cup and a half of mixed veggies. It didn't matter what kind. Just it would be pre-steamed and packaged in the pre-sealed. I'd make it ahead of time. We'd make all of our chicken breasts and everything on Sunday. Terry and I prepare all our foods, and then we'd seal it in the sealer, the food saver.
Okay.
So we'd have it all ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'd take a bridge at that time, some glutamine, some creatine, three liver tablets, three EFAs, so the health from the sun I would take at that time, and a CLA. Then in between lunch and the midday snack, I would take three more NO2s and four NeuroCharge again.
Okay.
Midday, I'd have a scoop of Ultrasize and Muscle Provider or Honest Whey. I'd have a peach or some strawberries or an apple. Early on, I would have a bar, but I found as the showtime got a little closer, bars can sometimes be triggers for me.
Mm-hmm.
So I basically use bars as an emergency tool only. I always had one on me. I always had one in my work desk drawer. Always had one in the car. Terry always had one in her purse, but only used them in a real emergency at that time.
Okay. And that's not uncommon, by the way, for bars.
Okay.
So
they would trigger me.
Right. To want to eat more and more and more.
Yeah.
Okay, so midday is done.
Yep.
Okay, now it's time for probably dinner, supper.
Yeah, well, usually I would work out, so that would be my night workout, like either weights or cardio or something like that. So I would, actually, about 8 weeks out, I started an ECA stack, and that was a true ECA stack, by the way, too, okay?
And you're talking ephedrine, caffeine, and aspirin.
Exactly.
Okay.
And then for workout energy, I didn't always do that, but when I was feeling just a little bit more tired than usual, if I had a long day or whatever at work, that's what I would do. I would take the creatine and glutamine, and then I'd do my workout. And during the workout, I would take 20 to 25 BCAA tablets, okay? And that tended to give me a better pump, so I would do that.
This program continues at this point on side B.
And then I would have supper, and supper would be salmon or lean beef, chicken, or it could be tuna. Didn't have tuna too much for supper. Usually I'd use that for lunch. I'd use those little packets that they have now.
Mm-hmm.
Really work out well. So I'd save the salmon for the evening. And sometimes I'd have turkey, you know, turkey breast. Again, I'd have a cup and a half of veggies or a sweet potato I would have. I was trying to cut back on diet soda. I really only had about a half a diet soda a day during this time. Most of the time I would just drink water. But Terry got me hooked on the calorie-free green tea. So I was starting to drink a little bit more of the green tea.
Okay.
And then I would have three CLA again, liver tablets, glutamine, and creatine. And then before bed, I would have a premium shake, ISP premium chocolate shake, which I loved. And just made that with ice cubes and just the powder and a little bit of water. And as a matter of fact, the way I like to make it, I would make it and then put it in the freezer for a little while and then eat it like ice cream.
Oh, sure.
Really tastes great. Works out excellent. And the chocolate, I love the chocolate.
So premium is downed with the ice, or it's like it's eaten like ice cream.
Mm-hmm.
And does that pretty much conclude the exercise and feeding of the day?
Yeah, pretty much. Every once in a while, if I got a real hunger pain where I felt hungry, and it didn't happen that often, but when I did, especially towards the end, towards the last 2 weeks, I would have some sugar-free Jell-O.
Okay.
Okay, and that really helped stave off the hunger. I would just have like a quarter cup or half cup of that Jell-O, and it really did help a lot.
At least it was something, right?
Right, yeah, it was just something to munch on or something to, you know, for that nervous energy, you know, something to chew on.
Would you say, I mean, it sounds like you did, but would you say that you continued to eat a pretty wide variety of foods right up until showtime, or was it pretty much chicken and broccoli?
No, it wasn't chicken and broccoli at all. As a matter of fact, I mean, it was a wide variety of vegetables. I had any vegetable. I mean, it wasn't like, well, I got to make sure I never eat corn.
Right.
Or I got to make sure I never eat carrots or, you know, like some of these diet plans go. No, I had my good share of broccoli, too, but it was mixed in with every other type of vegetable that you could have. Green peas, things that I never ate before, and I found out I'm really enjoying now.
Did you ever eat at restaurants or sub shops or anything like that?
Yeah, we don't frequent restaurants all that much anymore. But during training for the contest, there were occasions when we would go out, our friends would want us to go out, so we'd go out to like an Italian restaurant or something, and I would have just a smaller portion of what everybody else was having as my splurge that week. Same with, like, after training once in a while, I would go out and have a Subway and just load it up with veggies and have turkey. You actually even saw me eat those.
Oh, sure. Sure. Now, so you still had a splurge about once a week.
Yep.
Right up until showtime.
Yes, I did.
Yeah. So you didn't have to totally forego even your favorite foods. At least you didn't have to abstain from them 100% even right up until showtime.
Not at all. As a matter of fact, what I did was I kind of weaned off of chocolate chip cookies, which is my biggest weakness. And the way I did that was my 4 weeks out, I had 5 chocolate chip cookies. That was my splurge. 3 weeks out, I had like 3 cookies. And 2 weeks out, I had 2. So, I mean, I just kind of tapered it down. And it really wasn't that big of a deal. It just didn't even bother me all that much. And that was, believe it or not, in conjunction with having like a slice of pizza or something. So I really didn't even cut it down to one splurge meal. I actually had kind of like a splurge and a half.
Too many splurges or...
Yeah.
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 And it certainly changes things when your focus is so clear and your commitment is so intense, doesn't it?
Oh, it definitely does.
I mean, with regard to how you felt, you didn't feel deprived. You didn't have that, you know, I'm punishing myself by only having 2 cookies or whatever.
Not at all. And, you know, the funny thing is, too, is what I did was, it's a psychological game that you play, I guess, with yourself a little bit, but we have smaller plates, and a lot of times I put our food on smaller plates, and I cut it up into smaller sections. Even like the chocolate chip cookie, I would cut into 4 sections, so it would be 4 pieces rather than 1 piece.
That is an excellent suggestion, by the way. The smaller plate and the cutting up.
Yeah, it just makes things look bigger.
Absolutely.
It works.
Absolutely, it does. You're absolutely right. I couldn't agree more. If anyone hasn't tried that, simply get a smaller plate when you sit down for lunch or dinner or breakfast or whatever, and you'll fill it up, and it's a mind thing. It's a psychological thing, but it does feel, in some small way, like you're getting more.
Yeah, it does.
It's such it's almost a, you know, a trick to the mind, but it really does work, and I highly suggest it.
I think you enjoy those small pieces a little bit more. You chew them longer. You, like with the chocolate chip cookie, that one piece, I actually enjoyed it more rather than woofing down a whole cookie at one time. It was one piece of that cookie, and I actually just kind of relished it a little longer.
Absolutely. Because of the timeliness of this interview and because of your recent competition that has now passed, and we'll get to that,
okay,
we have to talk about pre-competition strategy here. There's so many people that are just, they get all bent out of shape trying to figure out the tiniest little things to do. And even though I've written about it in the fourth edition, they read it, they don't necessarily believe it, they don't know exactly what it means. So since we're together now,
mm-hmm,
I think it's important that we talk about your pre-competition strategy. So everyone wants to know if Tom cut water, did he cut sodium, did he load on potassium, did he take niacin, did he drink wine, did he eat a Snickers bar backstage, did he stand on his head, you know, what did he start doing?
Well, I actually started throwing salt in 4 corners.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, well, let you know that.
So when did you start doing things differently prior to your Saturday show?
You know, quite honestly, I really didn't do things all that much differently. There are a few minor adjustments that I made in the last 4 weeks prior to the show. The last 2 weeks I had to make a little bit more severe adjustments because of the fact that I lost a little bit of ground during the passing of my father-in-law. So I got behind just a little bit there, and I had to make up a little bit of ground in the last 2 weeks. But quite honestly, and this is the honest-to-God truth, I got the program to show you, I basically was doing the regular workout generator.
Mm-hmm. So that was your workout regimen. It was pretty much the generator.
Doing that, I increased my cardio a little bit, where I was doing basically a combination of both interval training in the morning, and I would do moderate cardio but longer duration in the evenings sometimes, okay, just to burn off extra calories. And it wasn't like, it wasn't high intensity moderation, it was medium intensity moderation. In other words, I could carry on a conversation if I wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
It was great infomercial time for me. I would just veg out and just do the minutes. It wasn't a big deal.
Right. So So now let's get into this, maybe just a few days before when things do start changing, or maybe people think that things are going to change drastically. Let's talk about water on Friday.
Okay.
And sodium as well. Water, sodium, potassium. And what changes started occurring Thursday, Friday, that kind of thing?
Well, first of all, I think you'd be surprised at the changes that happened in your body last week before a show. I think, and you had told me this was going to happen, but I really didn't believe it. But quite honestly, in the last week before the show, you are kind of pumped up. You're a little bit nervous. That in itself burns more calories, no question about it.
Mm-hmm.
And every day I saw a new vein or new muscularity somewhere happening in my body. I did increase the cardio because in the last 4 days I basically did 2 training sessions a day, sometimes 3. I felt I needed to do that. We had assessed where I was, and I was in a good shape on Sunday prior to the contest, but we both knew that I think we could have made it a little bit better if I just put my nose to the grindstone and worked a little bit harder to burn those calories.
Right.
It was more a matter of getting the exercise minutes in than training intensity at that time.
Mm-hmm.
It was a matter of doing some resistance training, adding a few more sets to what I was already doing. I actually did some extra supersetting or giant setting. In other words, I basically took a moderate weight but did 4 sets of 4 different exercises without rest and did about 10 to 12 reps of each exercise at a moderate weight. And really, the muscles are really screaming after that giant set.
Right.
So I did a few of those for each body part, working a different body part on each separate day.
I think we could kind of nutshell that answer with regard to the training, and you and I had discussions of this, and you said, what should I do in the last few weeks? And I think I told you, have fun.
Right.
Make it interesting.
And that's exactly what I did. I mean, yeah. I did some things that weren't in a regime, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
It was just training. It was just training with a weight that would give you a good workout,
mm-hmm.
but not something that was going to crush you. Because
right.
I didn't want an injury at that point either.
And not something necessarily that had to be so structured and focused on progression like resistance training normally is.
Right.
It's just like, get through the workout, decide what you want to do, don't get injured, be smart, have fun, burn calories.
And that's exactly the approach I took. Now, as far as water and everything on Friday, I'll be honest with you. Thursday, I was following my nutrition plan, dropped the calories to around, that was my lowest time, and I was eating about 1,350 calories at that time, averaging about 1,350 calories per day. No splurge this week. The last week, I didn't really have a splurge
right.
from Sunday to the contest.
Sure.
And on Thursday, I basically dropped out everything except pretty much lean meat, which was actually ate tenderloin, and had grapefruit or peaches as my carbohydrate for Thursday and Friday.
Okay.
So that's what I did for Thursday and Friday.
Of course, everything was unsalted.
Yeah, but I didn't do the unsalting thing until on Friday.
Right.
I salt a lot, probably more than most people recommend or whatever.
Okay.
I just like salt on my food. So I cut back my salt on Thursday,
okay.
but then cut it out on Friday.
Okay.
And I used Miss Dash, which I actually found to be pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
I was surprised.
Absolutely. So you really only started the sodium reduction the Friday before, which we're talking, the contest is on Saturday. We're
right.
talking the day before.
Exactly. The day before, and that's when I started the distilled water, too. Up to that point, I was drinking regular water and trying to increase my regular water intake Sunday through Thursday a little bit. You know, I usually drink about 1.5 gallons a day. So I tried to get it up to about 2 gallons a day. And that's kind of hard because you're going to the bathroom a lot anyway.
Constantly, it seems.
Yes, it does.
Okay, so sodium is reduced on Friday, and your foods are getting pretty plain.
Yep.
And what'd you do with potassium?
I did the regular, what it says in the book, I basically took the 200 milligrams each hour.
Right, X times, and so that you got in about 2,500 milligrams for the day.
Exactly.
Okay, so a lot of people say, oh, that's potassium loading. Actually, it's not. It's exactly what you ought to have in a day. It's just that we've got such a shift because the sodium is so low, and bringing the potassium up, the objective with that, which I think it did help in your case, is that we're looking to drive water inside the muscle cell and keep it from pooling outside the muscle cell so that you don't look smooth.
Yeah, and I'll be honest with you, Dave. I really thought that Friday was going to be a tougher day. And eating the steak, and I had about 3 ounces of steak a serving, and I had that 6 meals that day with the grapefruit. And
mm-hmm.
I'll tell you what, it was not that difficult. One little suggestion I will tell to people, though, too, to make the distilled water taste a little bit better, I basically had a little forethought and made a bunch of distilled, actually it was sodium-free spring water,
mm-hmm.
and I actually made ice cubes, a bunch of ice cubes. So I had sodium-free ice cubes because I like cold water.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually even packed that in a cooler and took that in bags and took that to the show with me as well. So I always had really cold distilled water. And that, to me, really made a difference because when I drank some that was warm, I didn't like it at all.
I agree. I think that's a great suggestion. So what about carbs? Hey, everybody knows you got to cut carbs out when you're getting ready for a show. Got to go to zero carbs. Oh, wait a minute. No, it's not zero carbs. You got to go to carb loading. You got to load with carbs. No, wait a minute. I don't know. It's one or the other. What'd you do, Tom?
Basically, again, Thursday and Friday I had steak and grapefruit was pretty much my carb. I had a peach and some, I actually even had some strawberries.
What would you say you had for total carbs on Friday?
You know, total carbs on Friday, I guess you could easily figure this one out here. I basically had a half a grapefruit six times a day, that day.
Okay.
And I had actually had a peach and some strawberries.
Okay, so your carb intake on Friday was like strictly fruit.
Right.
Okay. You'll see in the fourth edition of the book that there are a few other carb choices, but you know, everyone's an individual and there are choices that can be made. It's not
right.
as though there has to be, you have to have a yam or you have to have brown rice or you have to have something else, and no one can say that it didn't work for you, that's for sure.
Yeah, seemed to work well.
So you didn't load with carbs, you didn't cut out carbs, and look at this, people are freaking out 42 weeks away from their ultimate goal by trying to cut out fruit, and here you're having fruit as your carb source the last day before the show. I mean, there's so many myths out there that could really just sabotage you and get you focusing on the wrong thing, and here you are eating fruit the day before a show. I think it's great. I think it's absolutely great. So let's talk tan for a second. You had a good base tan from a tanning booth or bed or whatever, but let's talk chemicals here. When did you start applying tan? What'd you use? How many coats, and what'd you do?
Okay, I actually put the entire process on the board.
Okay.
So people will be able to go there and see the whole thing. But make a quick synopsis here of everything. Basically set up a base tan about 8 weeks out, did the tanning bed and stand-up tanning, okay? Made sure that I kept my skin moisturized all the time, which for a guy is just like really a pain.
Mm-hmm.
We don't think about these things. We don't care about these things. You know, we're men.
So true. So true as far as not caring about it. Yeah.
I actually started shaving about 4 weeks out to get my skin ready for it so that it wouldn't rash.
Mm-hmm.
I have pretty sensitive skin, so I wanted to make sure that I wasn't going to use some type of shaving cream or something the day before a show that would make me break out.
Right.
So I started doing that about 4 weeks out before the show. Also started doing exfoliating about a week out. And exfoliating, for guys that don't know, it's basically taking kind of like a scrub brush to your skin to get the old dead skin off. This also is supposed to help make the tan smoother, apparently, and seemed to do that for us. We used Pro-Tan, didn't do it on the face, but started Thursday night and applied one coat of Pro-Tan. Make sure that you have, we basically poured it into one of those disposable or reusable cups,
mm-hmm.
and put it on with the applicator. Don't spray it on. It's really messy as it is,
right.
And you're going to get a better tan. And we just used a little bit. We didn't go overboard here and made sure that we had, you know, I shaved the night before. So I shaved Wednesday and then just did a light shave on Thursday before applying and exfoliated one more time before applying the first coat of this Pro-Tan. And have somebody there with you. I just want to thank Terry for being so patient with me. It is a process, and you're going to have to spend a little bit of time with this person, and you're nervous about the contest anyway, so be ready for a little patience here.
Yeah, and choose someone that you're really getting along with.
Yeah.
Because you're going to get to know each other really well.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah,
you do. So we did the first set, first tan on Thursday night, and then let it dry. Used a hair dryer to help dry it. We would do a little area and then use a hair dryer to blow dry it so it would dry a little bit faster, and then we just kind of blended it in.
I can just hear 100 people that are getting in shows kicking on their blow dryers to dry their tans now. Thanks a lot, Tom. I got people using blow dryers all over the country now to dry their Pro-Tan.
But it works.
Okay.
Makes it dry faster.
All right, so you put your coat on. You put that coat on Thursday. You put your one coat on. Did you shower Friday?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
And I didn't want to be stinky.
Right, so you did a light shower, but you didn't, like, scrub yourself real hard.
No, you just use a real light soap and just, you know, kind of go in there, soap up real fast, and watch half the stuff pour off your body.
Right.
And rinse off real quick, and then just pad dry. Towel dry, pad dry.
So Friday's here. We've already covered the food thing on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
Now we've got to do some more tanning stuff.
Yeah, basically I just put on one more coat of Pro-Tan, just one more coat, and padded that again. At this point in time, you're not going to be showering the next day.
Did you put it on your face on that second round?
No, I actually didn't.
Okay, so you've got two total coats of Pro-Tan.
Yep.
All right, so the Pro-Tan's done, and it's Friday, and anything else that day for tanning?
That's it.
That's it for tanning.
I will say, I think I used a little bit of a bronzer moisturizer at that time, so that kind of blended it in a little bit more, I think.
Okay. So now it's Saturday before prejudging. It's early Saturday morning.
Yep.
Let's talk food real quick.
Okay.
And then let's talk tan.
Basically followed exactly what was written in the book, in the Lean Less Lifestyle. It's on page 427 to 430. I copied them. I highlighted everything I needed to do. I got up at about 3 o'clock in the morning. I'm telling you don't sleep the night before a show.
Yeah, if you can do melatonin and you tolerate it and you can test it way before the show and make sure that you do okay with melatonin. Melatonin is a godsend before a show because at least you can get some sleep. But go ahead.
Yeah, you don't sleep. So I got about 3 o'clock. Actually, at 3 o'clock in the morning, I had about a quart of water.
Okay.
Distilled water again.
So you're still drinking water. Haven't cut it out.
Yep, no, haven't cut it out. Went back to bed, tried to get a little more sleep, kind of tossed and turned a little bit, and got up about 4:30 or so again. And now I have another quart of water. And, again, I just kind of followed exactly what was written on the Leanest Lifestyle. So I basically had a little bit of oatmeal, I think I had, and yam.
Okay.
And that was it. And the potassium.
Right.
And then...
kept your sodium low, of course.
Yeah. I didn't have any sodium on that, of course.
Right.
Kind of paced. And then did some practice posing. And that's one thing I really do want to bring up, too, Dave, is start your practice posing about 6 weeks out of your show, if you can. I'm going to donate this to the club, too, but there's a great tape series called Practice Posing, and I'll be donating that series to the club, as well as I made up a practice posing tape. In other words, what it does is it calls out the mandatory poses. Now, this is a little different for guys than it is for the girls, but it won't matter because you want to know all the poses anyway.
Right.
And what I did was I timed 15 seconds between each call-out, kind of like a judge would do. So I would do relax front, okay, quarter turn to the right, and I would time about 15 seconds. I actually use a stopwatch and time 15 seconds between each turn. And I did 3 sets of those every day, about starting 6 weeks out of the contest. And it really helped me. Posing in itself is a workout. For those
Absolutely.
Who've never done it,
mm-hmm.
I was still sore on Thursday this week from the posing I did
Saturday.
Saturday.
Exactly. So, a great suggestion, by the way, on practice your posing early. So many people haven't practiced their posing at all, and they've got a routine they've got to put together. They've got mandatories they've got to do usually more than once in the day, and it really takes a lot out of you, and Tom is absolutely right in that you need to be able to hold those poses for 10 or 15 seconds because I can guarantee you the judges are going to make you hold them for 10 or 15 seconds as they're trying to look at everyone in the pose. So it's excellent advice, and you've got to get accustomed to it. So you're practicing your posing, you're getting up early, you're still drinking water, you followed basically exactly what the Leanest Lifestyle said as far as food and potassium and that kind of thing for Saturday morning. What about your last coat of tan here?
Last coat of tan was basically we put on a coat of Dream Tan. And Dream Tan, you'll see it for sale. It looks like this gigantic jar. It's actually a small, small, little tiny jar, and you don't need much of it. The thing is, you want a sheen, not a shine, with any of this stuff. And basically, you apply that, just take a little tiny dab, and you apply it in a kind of a circular fashion and blend it in with the Pro-Tan. And it's amazing how well this stuff blends in. And you really only need one coat. And you kind of push it into the skin. A lot of people said that they've had trouble with it coming off. I didn't have that at all. As a matter of fact, I didn't even have to reapply before the night show. And this I did apply to my face and make sure you get your eyelids. ears, your eyelids.
Yeah, your ears.
And your ears.
Did Terry use gloves or just hand or bare hand or?
No, we bought some of those surgical, real tight surgical gloves and
right.
used that. Because this whole tanning process, please, you know, get yourself some extra old towels because you're going to find it really is a messy process.
Right, absolutely. Okay, so you're tanned and you're as hydrated as you need to be.
Yep.
You had some food and it's time to go to prejudging. Tell us about the show. Let's talk about that. You go out, it's prejudging in the morning. How'd you feel?
Well, at prejudging, I felt great because you had stopped by the room to just check out my tan and everything, and I think the nicest thing that ever happened, I'll never forget the look in your eyes when you saw me for the first time and looked at me that day and said, "You're ripped, you're ready. Tracy, come in here."
Yeah. And of course...
And she saw me, and I just saw the look in her eyes and Terry's eyes, and they were both teary-eyed, and you had this look of cashier cat that just swallowed the canary.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, I'll never forget that moment. That in itself was worth any... I could have not done anything in that show, but to have that moment, that was really special.
Well, you know it when you see it, and I've seen enough of it, and I couldn't give you that look or that comment the week before, almost, but that day, there was absolutely no doubt, and my wife Tracy, as many of you know, she's had a lot of experience in watching me and so many people over the years, and so many contests that we've been to, and I've drug her to, she sees it too, she knows it, and she knew it, she absolutely knew it. So, you go to the show, you do prejudging, and there were 96 people in this show. Tom, you competed in the Masters category. Tell us how you did.
Well, I wanted to tell you just a little bit about right before that.
Okay.
Before I got on stage, I kind of made up a mixture of M&Ms.
This was before you got on stage during prejudging.
Yeah.
Okay.
M&Ms, peanut butter, a cup of peanut butter, a cup of honey, and three scoops, of Muscle Provider. You can use any type of protein powder, Honest Whey would be fine. And mix that all up in this blend, which I call the super goo.
So it was a cup of peanut butter,
yes.
A cup of honey.
Yes.
How many M&Ms?
Whatever it took.
About a cup. A cup of M&Ms.
You know me.
Yeah, and then, however much protein, and you mix all this into like a bowl or something?
Yeah, I put it in one of those reusable Tupperware type containers.
Well, prejudging starts at 12:30.
Right.
When did you have this?
I started taking it about 9:30, 10 o'clock.
Okay.
I had just a small teaspoon of it, and then kind of did that every 20, 30 minutes or so. Just would have a teaspoon of it.
Did you finish it before?
No, not at all. I mean,
okay.
I had quite a bit left.
I'm glad we clarified that.
No, I would have liked to have finished it,
yeah.
but I didn't.
Okay.
About every half an hour or so, I would have a teaspoonful of it, a good-sized teaspoonful
right.
of it. And I'd actually sip a little bit of water. And then right before, about a half an hour before we called out on stage, I had about, 25 BCAA tablets again. Because BCAAs tend to give me a good pump,
mm-hmm.
and at this point, you're pretty depleted, so anything you can do to get a good pump really helps out a lot.
Absolutely. So the competition, you've got, first of all, for brevity's sake, I need to kind of shorten things a little
sure.
bit for the interview, but here you are with this massive support group as well, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we've got like 25 coaching members that came
yep.
from all over the country, from Texas, California, Georgia.
No pressure.
Kentucky, yeah, no pressure. Kentucky, Wisconsin, South Dakota, all over the place. They came to see you compete, to meet with us, and to really have a good time that weekend, which we all did, of course. And there they all are. You competed. 96 people in the show. First real contest. And it has to be an NPC-sanctioned show, of course.
Yeah.
One of the biggest ones in the Midwest. How'd you do?
I took first place in my class, which just, you know, I'll be honest with you, I didn't even know what the other competitors looked like. I mean, I was so wrapped up in being there and being my very best that day.
Mm-hmm.
And I was concentrating just so hard on making sure I did my quarter turns right. You know, I heard you shout out from the audience a couple times, you know, keep things tight or... You know, or hear
legs, abs.
Yep, or Terry say something, or anybody, any of the support group that was there, which was just unbelievable. Everybody should experience that type of support sometime in their life, because I'll tell you, I get choked up just talking about it right now, because it was just the most phenomenal feeling of my life.
It's
incredible. It's, and I entertain. I've entertained in front of a lot of people, not in my shorts.
Yes. Not in posing trunks, but still.
Yeah, but still, this was one of the biggest highlights of my entertainment career.
I can only imagine. I wasn't on the stage that day, but vicariously, I was living it with you. So it was so incredible. I do agree. And you did look awesome, and there was no question. Even the meet promoter said that you didn't just win your class, you destroyed your class. And that's absolutely true. You came in shape. Just like we had said, there were a couple of guys larger than you in your class.
Yep.
But there was no doubt, never a shred of doubt, that if you came in the right condition, you could beat the larger guy who didn't. And that's exactly what happened. Well, what I want to talk about is this. You did win. It was a fantastic day for everyone that was involved, myself included and Tracy. And we just had a ball with the whole weekend, Tom. And as, you know, I'll quote Mark, you know, during the evening pizza splurge meal after the show when he said, Tom, thanks for winning. So what I want to talk about as we close here in the last minute or two is you finished the show, best ever, 5% body fat. You won with the support of 25 or so members that happened to be there, and we all got together and an experience that'll likely never be duplicated. What's next?
Well, first I've got to say this public again. I have to thank you for everything that you've done for me. I mean, Terry and I have been doing this for 4 years now, Dave. You've been with us just about every step of the way here. And, you know, I would not be in this place today without the support and the knowledge that I've gained from working with you over these last 4 years. And the friendship is, I mean, I can't say enough about it. And I know that even better things are yet to come. Terry and I have lived this lifestyle. We're proof that the leanness lifestyle works, and it's not just a short thing. It's not just a diet. It's not a diet. It is a lifestyle. We have lived this lifestyle now. Terry's still a size 2 petite. I'm at 44. I have the body that I wanted to have when I was 17 years old. Think about that.
Mm-hmm.
Think about that. That's amazing to me. That is just totally amazing to me. Terry's taken in my picture to work, and one of the ladies said, this is what you hang up over your bed. I want to be respectful to you. This is the kind of pinup that you put up over your bed when you're a high school girl.
Sure.
I mean, those types of compliments. My mother-in-law saying, can I touch those abs? I mean, all those things are priceless. I mean, and living lifestyle is definitely worth every investment. And when you say what's next, I know well that you have to continue to set goals. And so my next goal, again, this journey here, this kind of fifth journey, if you want to call it,
mm-hmm.
this fifth stage of action,
right.
has been about not about getting to this point, but about living here. And so my commitment now is to stay at 8% or under while trying to add just a little bit more muscle. I'm 44 years old. My dreams of having 22-inch guns are over with.
Right.
But a little bit more muscle, maybe a little bit more balance in my physique. I have been gifted in the fact of knowing to train for symmetry. Want to continue to do that. Want to enjoy training, enjoy the process, and just really live the leanness lifestyle, just like Terry does, every day, and stay lean, fit, and healthy. Our next public appearance, so to speak,
mm-hmm.
of that is going to be at the Arnold Classic. It's been a dream of mine to go to that ever since I was, ever since he started that thing, and was supposed to go with Body Logics, and the company kind of folded before we ever got a chance to do that. So this year, my promise to myself was that we are going one way or another.
Mm-hmm.
And I told you and I told other club members very publicly that I will be at 8%. You'll see my abs, no question about it. I have no doubt in my mind whatsoever. I took a couple days off here. Already noticed that I felt a little bloated, didn't feel quite as good. And so by Wednesday of this past week, I already started cutting out all the junk. Found out that I was a little bit actually almost addicted to sugar.
Mm-hmm.
You learn a lot about yourself and a lot more about how your body responds to foods when you're that lean. It seems to really increase the sensitivity to certain foods, if you want to call it that.
Mm-hmm.
So I know now what foods are a little bit more triggers than I thought they were in the past. And it's not that necessarily I have to avoid them completely, but I just know what they are and know which ones I have to eat more in moderation of. And so basically now it's just a matter of just living the lifestyle. It's that simple. And it's gotten to the point in our lives, in Terry's and my life, where people say, well, isn't that hard to do? And, you know, it's come down to the fact that exactly as you said it a long time ago, no, it just is.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what it is. It just is.
Your perception has come full circle, and now it's no harder for you to stay 175-ish than it was for you to be 225-ish a few years ago.
Exactly.
Even though you are perhaps putting a little more effort on the output side, you are a little tighter on the food side, the perception is such that it's not harder. And that's when you've come full circle, and you're getting very, very close. If you're not there, you could be there, but you're getting very, very close to it becoming you. And when it becomes you, then you don't even think about it. I'm not saying it requires zero effort, because none of us get determination, but you don't hardly have to think about what you're doing. You're just programmed to do the daily things that you do that keep you lean and super fit.
Right. Well, I think, you know, we're not there 110% yet, mm-hmm. but I'll tell you, we're darn close now. Yeah. I mean, after living it for 4 years and each cycle getting to a lower set point, I think that I can honestly say now that I have full confidence that, you know, it just is. And being at 175 pounds or under is just not going to really be that big of a deal.
Absolutely. Well, Tom, I want to thank you so much for doing the interview with us today. I'm so very proud of what you've accomplished and how far you've come. You, as a member, you've been with the club the longest of any member I know of. We've become friends. I'm proud to call you a friend. And I want to say that we look forward to watching your continued travels and journey through this process. And as close as you are, there will still be things just like there are for all of us. And I look forward to being there every step of the way, seeing you at the Arnold. And I'm going to leave it at that. So thank you, everyone, for staying with us during this extra-long interview. I hope you got a lot out of it. I think you did. I think that what Tom has shared and what we were able to talk about on this interview are priceless, actually, and stuff that you just can't get anywhere else, and stuff that's just so just incredibly valuable, I think, for getting to the heart of the matter and getting to what's real for this transformation process instead of the spin that you typically see in the magazines and elsewhere. So thank you, everyone, for your attention and your time. Tom, thank you, and we'll catch up with you on the next interview.
Thanks, Dave, and I'll be on the board to help anybody that needs it.
Goodbye now.
Bye now.
We hope you found this interview informative and enjoyable. For more information on the Leanness Lifestyle, please visit www.leannesslifestyle.com or call 1-800-382-9611.